Hello, and thank you for joining us for today's webinar. I'm Nancy Stone with RealComm, and we're excited to be presenting another segment of our Cybersecurity for Commercial and Corporate Real Estate series. We have a great panel today to present part two of the series, which will focus on operational technology cybersecurity. Before we get started, I'd like to review a few housekeeping items. First, please use the Q&A box on the bottom right of your screen to submit questions or comments. We'll try to get to all of them during the session, or we'll follow up with you after if we run short of time. For the best webinar experience, we suggest you close any other internet applications you are running. If you have any technical issues during the session, please contact me at nstone@realcomm.com. And lastly, this webinar is being recorded and a link to the recording will be sent to all registrants. We'd like to thank today's gold sponsors, 5Q, Intelligent Buildings, Snyder Electric, and Tempered Networks. You'll hear more about these great companies during the session. Today's webinar will be moderated by Charles Myers, Executive Director of REC, the Real Estate Cyber Consortium. Charles has more than 40 years of financial systems and technology experience. Currently, he's spearheading REC to elevate awareness across the real estate community and improve cybersecurity preparedness for buildings and facilities. Charles, welcome back, and thanks for moderating today.
Thank you, Nancy, and thank you again to RealComm and our sponsors for putting together our webinar today. You know, last week I thanked all our first responders and healthcare workers, grocery and delivery, and our newest essential workers, those that are coordinating and administering vaccinations. Again, we thank you. We have a great lineup today on an important topic. This is a two-part series, as Nancy mentioned, cybersecurity for commercial and corporate real estate. Today is part two on operation technology cybersecurity. You know, last week I mentioned that the automated systems that used BACnet and Modbus have been around since the 80s, but that the marketplace changed dramatically with the digital IP-based systems and the internet over the last 10 years. Much of this growth is in the OT space or operational technology. You know, OT has become a catch-all phrase that covers both IoT and IIoT, or the Industrial Internet of Things. While remote monitoring, alerting, and remote command and control became a game changer for the facilities world, it also opens up our world to huge vulnerabilities when these systems are unsecured. And little thought was given over to security in those early days. Last week, as we talked about cybersecurity on the information technology side, Jesse Creo had a great story about how playing softball with the facilities and operations side really helped build camaraderie with the IT team that he felt was important to the success of their efforts going forward. Brian Loper followed up and said he couldn't agree more, as the human connection is one of the most important parts of any IT project. All of the panelists agreed that personal relationships are critical to ensure success, especially in the world where IT and OT come together. Presumptions of how things work need to make room for true understanding, and risks need to be weighed and understood by all the parties involved. This can only occur with open communication and good collaboration. Don Goldstein, who's joining us again today, made an important point as we were discussing cyber insurance when he said that it is important for any outside firm that is brought in to help to have a good understanding of the OT, as you can't acquire adequate insurance without having a good understanding of what you are insuring. And Gary Kinghorn is also joining us again, said the more you are building your cyber policies around identities, the easier it is going to be to map your devices to physical security roles. You know, when I first came aware of the OT devices that were already connected to building networks, my eyes became wide open to the potential impact, but it was the sense of what was coming that really made me take note. I had the image of an iceberg in my mind, as you can readily see and identify all the IT devices above the waterline, but it was like all the OT devices that really bothered me that you couldn't see. How are they accessed, controlled, monitored, and patched? The latest report I've seen has said that worldwide IoT devices will go over 10 billion in 2021, with over 4 billion of these being industrial IoT devices. And that 4 billion will grow to over 10 billion by 2030 for just industrial IoT devices. I knew we needed to find out if there were others that were as concerned as we were relative to these threats. In 2016, with the help of RealCom, we met with 20 other organizations to see how we could collectively improve cybersecurity in the building technology supply chain. So in 2017, we formed the Real Estate Cyber Consortium, or RECC, and we began working on best practices and guidelines that could be used to easily improve cybersecurity. The members of the REC are commercial and corporate property owners like Wells Fargo and REITs like Boston Properties and Brookfield. We also have nonprofit entities like the GSA, Stanford, and MIT, and we represent over 7 billion square feet of managed real estate worldwide. We are excited to announce that the REC formally incorporated as a nonprofit in January, and we will soon be accepting memberships for leadership advisors and industry members in the next month. Why did we come together and what is in it for you? For anyone who has been on this journey can attest, it is not simple, and there are many paths, and not all the paths lead to successful management of the problem. The REC offers a community of seasoned industry professionals who have come together to change the industry. But along the way, we are helping to provide insight and help others on their journey. Our collective value has proven to be much greater than our individual value, and I encourage you to find out more about us. Today, we're going to be exploring OT risks and threats and the culture of this world below the waterline. Let me first introduce Sabine Lam from Google. Now, Sabine has a title that I'm sure didn't exist 10 years ago. Sabine is the building operating, I knew I was going to mess this up. Sabine is the building operating systems global lead for the Google Real Estate and Workplace Services organization. In this role, she focuses on bringing the connected building vision to the forefront of Google Real Estate and facilities operations teams and equips them to deliver next generation services and workspaces to enhance employee security and productivity. Sabine, welcome.
Thanks, Charles, for the introduction, and hello to everyone attending this webinar. I wanted to start with giving a little bit of context around the scale of the problem we're trying to solve. And it comes to no surprise that the number of IP devices is exploding, not only because we want more information about our building to better operate it and provide a better environment for employees, but also because of the infrastructure. We're moving from serial connected IP devices to IP connected devices. So, we're looking at connecting every single one of those FCUs as opposed to just one of the controller. So we're seeing, a 100x increase of those devices, and really for IoT light environment, we're between 10 to 50. IP connection for IoT heavy environment, we're looking at thousands of those devices on our network. Not only there's more of them, they're also a lot smarter. You know, we're talking cameras, we're talking microphone, we're talking health sensor, and much more intelligent with Linux operating systems, with cloud and AI interface. And it's really touching some type of data that is becoming data privacy concern, employee policy concerns. And so it's providing this very rich environment for anyone who wants to create havoc in our environment. And so, the impact on the business from someone hacking into our building, the reputational impact, brand damage, and then obviously the personal safety of our employee. If we can't protect our building, if we can't protect our employee, how can we protect the data, right? Specifically for Google. And so the way we're approaching it is starting with awareness, and certainly started with the IT team and the security team bringing those issues up to the forefront for our real estate and workplace services team. Understanding what is our building starts with an audit. What are the technology installed? What are we trying to do with that technology? And that really inform the IT and security team around what are the type of policy we need to put in place and what are the solution as well. First step is risk mitigation. We find a problem, we solve it right away, but that also very quickly led to limiting the operation of that building. You know, IT doesn't like remote access. You know, outbound information is fine, inbound is a problem. And that removes the capability of remote access for our operation team. That's a big problem. So we're moving from risk mitigation, which is also a temporary thing. Anybody, you know, you can turn off a connection, somebody can come back the next day and reinstalling it, to a fully manageable environment, visible, manageable, operational environment. And for us, we're moving basically all our IT, IP devices on our corporate network. And the steps are as follow. Everything that is unmanaged, unmanaged network are not protected. They're not monitored. They're not inventoried. So we're moving all those devices to our controlled segmented network, which is managed from our for our networking team. We are also removing all unqualified and unapproved devices. We have very clear guidelines around what is an IoT secure environment. And so we have qualification lab working with manufacturer to ensure that the devices installed in our environment are meeting those specification. Vendor machines, you know, old operating systems are all over the place, and we're moving them to corporate managed workstation, installing those systems on those managed systems, and ensuring that we're providing remote access through this managed solution. Remote access, as I mentioned, is a big issue. We don't trust cellular access, 3G, 4G, ISP connection. We disable open network, whether it's Telnet, HTTP, FTP, and in general, third-party remote access is a concern to us. And so, you know, moving towards this managed remote access solution is a process, but it is where we want to be. Password is a known issue. You know, we see post-its all over the place. We see default password. And so how do we put in place robust processes and procedures for maintaining, sharing, and resetting those passwords? So all of this, of course, is not once and done. You know, some of it is reactive, some of it is proactive, and it's an ongoing process and evolution. Systems change, security requirement changes, and so it's not one and done. It's an ongoing, so yeah, it's ongoing. And so the way we're approaching it is to put the right team in place. The top section is around what team within Google, and then we're surrounding ourselves with industry leaders, vendors that can help with understanding really the industry and the environment. And so at Google, we have about a group of five organizations across different functions that work towards providing the solution. And so that's the building operating system organization. It has people from IT, from security, from engineering, from corporate operations, and real estate and workplace services. All those organizations work together towards a solution. And then for the deployment of the solution, we put in place IoT TPM. And those are really providing the strategic direction for new construction and existing sites, and you know, looking towards a global consistency for our solution. And then governance is a key element. It's okay to find those new policies and standards. It is you know, more complex to ensure that it is put in place and followed. And so we have a governance team that is looking at device qualification and that is developing those standards and putting systems in place to verify that things are built towards and following those standards. On the vendor side, we have a new set of skills that is provided to the real estate team. First, with a digital building consultant, especially on strategic building, they need to understand what we're trying to create, how much information we want to gather, and it's really based on the type of use cases that needs to be solved for that, you know, for that location. And then we have a master systems integrator. The role of the master systems integrator is evolving, and now we are looking at ensuring that they apply the schemas, the ontology that we have developed, at least for Google, but it could be any type of ontology, and make sure that they understand how to put those devices in cloud and register the devices and make sure that the data is normalized and flowing, and we can have access to it in a very secure way. And finally, the controls SME is kind of the governance level, the oversight throughout the design cycle of the construction site. And so they are in place to review the design from beginning to end and ensure that if something is not following our standard, it gets corrected ahead of the construction. And so those, you know, that's a quick overview of what we have put in place. We have very clear guidance and mandate of what is secure and unsecure, and it's a matter of making it happen in our building. I quickly put a few links here if you want to have access to it. You know, we Google approached the problem in an open standard fashion. And so as soon as we have something available and we can publish it, now we have information around security requirement for IoT devices. Beyond Corp approach, I really encourage you to click on it and see how we're approaching it. And the last link is this device automated qualification platform, which allow manufacturer or anyone to test their devices against those security requirements. And I'll stop here. Charles,
welcome. So Google has a large footprint, lots of icebergs, if you will. Do you apply your solution holistically to your entire portfolio, leased, owned, Google operated and landlord operated sites?
Yeah, so absolutely, right? We're certainly a very large portfolio. There's existing building, there's new building. Of course, it's a lot easier to apply it to new construction, but we have our eyes on existing buildings and looking at remediation. We also can do a lot more if we operate the building. So working with the landlord and acknowledging early on in our contract that, you know, Google cares about cybersecurity and data access. And so we are, for whether it's existing construction or whether we lease a site that we cannot operate and cannot impact directly, we are now really putting in place some legal terms and working with the landlord and putting legal terms in our lease contract to ensure that the best practices for cybersecurity are in place before we move in, and that the landlord is willing to share data with us. And but, you know, it is a process, but it is certainly, you know, we're at the stage where it's a little more of a tenant world where we have the opportunity to look for the best site. A couple years ago, it'd be, well, you know, we don't have that and it doesn't matter. There's no other sites for you to move to. So, you know, there's no ability really to make a big difference. But I think now we're moving in an era where there's opportunity and we're going to expect a lot more from landlord. And then we're also expecting a lot more from Google where it operates its own sites. Yeah.
So does that also equally apply to security standards? Do they apply across the board the same to lease sites as well as owned?
Well, so, you know, on our own site, we're talking about moving the IP devices to the Google network. If it's leased, we cannot move the device to our Google network. We can't expand that network in those area. And so it's really more around best practice, around teaching, you know, what are the proper approach and working with a landlord to move towards a safer environment. But we do care.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Yeah. So, you know, Google's known for its strong culture. And last week, Jesse and Brian shared about how important building alliances between the IT side and the OT side and how important that was to success. Is that something that came easy to Google or did you have challenges with that as well?
Well, so, you know, like I said, it's a cross-organizational program, and it really was very important that the IT and security side brought the problem up front. It started a few years back where on the real estate side, we're like, no, oh, you know, it's just a BMS. If it goes down, that's okay. We'll open the door and put a fan and not a big deal. So it was an evolution, right, for this understanding. But also what happened is understanding on the IT side, that they have to not only say what is not okay, but also provide a solution for something that is okay, right? They can't just block the operation team. And so I think as soon as we got to this pragmatic approach where, okay, there are risks, but we also need a solution. And we work together towards a solution that is less risky. We made good progress, but it, you know, it started with, sorry, no remote access. You know, we're locking your building down. You get nothing. Well, you know, you get hated there. We still need to operate. So it's helping the IT team understand what we're trying to do on the operation side. So this evolution, as well as the other side, the OT team understanding that it is a real risk. And again, the type of data we're capturing today and the type of systems we're putting in place are so risky and, you know, so invasive in some ways that we have to address it. There's no question.
Well, great. Thank you so much. So Sabine's going to join us for our roundtable at the end. Thank you, Sabine. In the meantime, let me now introduce Ken Kurz of COPT. Ken brings over 20 years of leadership and operational experience in cybersecurity, network technologies, information systems, risk mitigation and remediation, and technical project management to COPT. He has also held various technical and leadership positions with the Department of Defense. Ken, welcome.
Hey, thanks, Charles. Glad to be here. Appreciate everybody joining the webinar this afternoon. So to begin, I thought I'd just give a short overview of who we are, who is COPT. We're not exactly a household name like Google. We are a office REIT that we do everything from buy dirt to build a suit to property management and everything in between. But what's really unique about us, and I think what we're bringing to this discussion, is about 90% of our annual revenue comes from direct leasing to the government via, i.e. the Department of Defense or defense contractors or IT providers who support the government and particularly the defense spaces. And so we have a really unique perspective, I think, on not only how we have approached cybersecurity with respect to OT devices in our buildings, that relationship with the government and sort of, even as Sabine was touching on it, the asset owner, operator, landlord to tenant relationship when they have entities that do this type of stuff for their own properties, and some of the challenges that there are around leased space when it comes to the government. But primarily we have properties in the Baltimore, DC, Northern Virginia area, outside Redstone Arsenal in Huntsville, Alabama, and down in San Antonio, Texas. Okay. So what is a building system, right? We keep hearing about IoT, and I wanted to include this because it really depends on your perspective, particularly when we're talking about cybersecurity and controls and risk, right? And so many times, we'll get marketing material that says they have the latest, greatest solution for this IoT device or industrial Internet of Things, or, DoD policies being written around facility-related control systems. We have building technicians that refer to things as building management or building automation. But essentially, at the end of the day, particularly from where we sit in the office REIT world and even in our data center spaces, they're essentially the same things, right? You have a network mostly made up of IT devices, routers, switches, security appliances, and so on, out to some cyber to physical interface. For us, it's mostly things like JACEs and so on that control a plenum or a sensor or something like that. Or, even in some spaces, we have what we consider true SCADA networks, right, with PLCs that are really operating some mission essential, mission critical type of equipment. But at the end of the day, right, there's still an IT backbone that is networking them together and providing sort of command and control for those end devices. And so, for the past few years, I've had this, why is networking it a good or bad idea? It's not. But at the end of the day, it's not really avoidable, right? It's already networked, but there's other elements there, right, that where some folks who are going to follow on behind me are going to talk to, like, remote access has been put in, or, do they even have any sort of endpoint monitoring or endpoint security or things of that nature? And so really what these building systems elements within the company, third-party vendors and so on, have really created is sort of this shadow IT environment that exists that we're really focused on, right? And it's not avoidable. From an IT perspective, we want to provide value to the company and not just be a cost center. And so there's plenty of opportunities from the building system environment to help from a business analytics perspective. And that's really an approach that we've taken and found a lot of value in. All right. So the IT-OT journey, which was something that Charles and I talked about today, we really have three perspectives. We have sort of triple net leased facilities directly to the U.S. government. The majority of our portfolio is sort of commercial office multi-tenanted environments. Some may have secure space in it that the government has built and provided and certified sitting on a particular floor, but people still can walk in and into it in and off, on and off the street. And then we do have a data center line of business where we do have some spaces that are unique in that we provide white glove service to folks who are co-locating items in a data center. And really each one requires a different approach, right? But at the end of the day, when it comes to risk management, from the facilities engineer to the boardroom, everybody has to play their role when we're talking about risk management. One of the first things that we did or really started to address with leadership of the company was traditionally been very focused on audit risk, right? We're a publicly traded company. Everybody wants to get through Sarbanes-Oxley compliance on a yearly basis. The risk to not making it through that is significant to the company. But at the same time, we didn't have our attention focused on asset risk, right? We have $5.5 billion worth of assets that these systems run in, but we're directly exposed to the internet. And so, you know, that really raised a lot of eyebrows from a board standpoint of saying, well, what are we doing to protect these assets? Like, this is what our company's built around. It's great that we're doing well in the audit, but we, you know, need to protect what our shareholders and our tenants are investing in. And so to that point, you know, that was a huge step forward for the company to sort of recognize that we weren't looking at it holistically and that we really needed to. And then cybersecurity risk versus operations risk, right, where as the CIO of the company, I have to stand before the board and talk about cybersecurity risk. We don't have anybody from the operations team that's sitting there talking about, hey, if you, you know, push these patches or reboot these servers, you're going to take out this building. We really found that we had to, you know, start this conversation and engage across the company to help manage those risks on both ends and find a happy medium. From our perspective, these are really different skill sets. You know, IT brings something to the table. The OT folks bring something to the table. You know, at first we fought it, but then we learned to embrace it, right? Kind of like Dr. Strangelove, where, you know, we didn't know walking into this what a JACE was. We didn't, you know, we had heard about Niagara and Tritium and Schneider and Siemens and all these things that were out there. And that's the OT side of the world. They're experts there. We acknowledge that. And really, you know, they've appreciated our help coming to the table from the standpoint of really trying to eliminate that shadow IT. We're providing value to them because we know things like asset management and vulnerability management and how to, you know, manage users and their accounts and how to provide secure remote access and those sorts of things that's not their wheelhouse, right? And so really, you know, working to overcome some of the reputations and stereotypes that exist from, hey, well, IT is not going to listen. They're just going to shut it off. They're going to reboot your stuff and then you're going to be screwed on the building side. Same thing, you know, our OT folks don't know anything about IT and they do, right? And so finding the best ways to complement each other is really important. And then really, you know, they're customers of ours because we're providing the transport, we're providing the backbone and getting moving them to be from a customer who's just using our stuff to being a partner to where we're engaged, you know, in real time with respect to how these systems and networks are running and applications that are running on top of them has been very beneficial. Okay, so just some broad strokes here, you know, as far as the support, as I mentioned, that we provide to the Department of Defense and others, you know, people would assume there's some secret sauce that's being asked for, and there really isn't. You know, from a government perspective, GSA, DOD do very well with respect to putting forward requirements to support their stuff. When they build a building or they own it, a lot of that exists. What they haven't done so good of a job at is, what does this mean when they're leasing facilities from an asset owner operator? And what should those requirements be? You know, and as Sabine mentioned, from her perspective as a tenant, right, they're starting to initiate these conversations. And very few times has that really come up. In fact, I think the last conversation I had with a tenant for their cybersecurity requirements, all it said was no remote access. That was sort of it. And so, you know, we view having these secure solutions in place as competitive differentiators, right? So when a Google or somebody else is looking for space that we can bring to the table and say, here's what we can offer from a cybersecurity perspective for anyone who's concerned about the systems that are running your building. And really at the end of the day, it comes down to protecting your tenants, your investors, protecting the company. And a lot of this is just down to the basics. Right, ensuring that, you know, if you can do the basic things from a cybersecurity perspective around the IT infrastructure that supports the OT, and I'll say it, OT applications that are running on top of it, it will go a very, very long way. And then the last thing I would do is sort of plug for the community is get involved, right? There's a lot of resources and knowledge that exists out there, whether it's the REC, other entities like Building Cybersecurity are getting spun up, DHS and CISA have the Industrial Control System Joint Working Group that meets a couple times a year as a wealth of knowledge. InfraGuard, there's the real estate ISAC that exists that provides some threat vulnerability information on a regular basis, as well as speakers and webinars, in addition to, you know, what RealCom is doing. So there's a lot out there. Get involved, get informed, reach out for help with your peers. It's a brave new world, right? And so there's lots of opportunities to figure out how to do this and get our systems and buildings where they need to be.
Ken, thanks. That was great. We are running a little bit of behind time, but I want to ask you a question about, you know, starting this conversation today. So if you're coming from the IT world and you're entering the operations and facilities world, how would you start with the selling and the partnering and the getting that discussion going?
Yeah, I think it's really important. You know, whether it's the softball game or something like that, it goes back to culture and how you're going to provide value, right? How are you going to make their lives easier? You know, when we sat down and showed them, hey, you don't have to worry about your network infrastructure anymore. You don't have to worry about remote access. We don't have to worry about account creation and termination. We'll take care of that for you. That was a big relief to our OT folks to not have to worry about that kind of stuff anymore. So just, I think, you know, showing how you can help, you know, it's not, you know, hey, I'm from IT, I'm here to help, but it's really proving it out and showing that you can do it.
And I would imagine it's an ongoing relationship too. It's not just a one and done and get in, but you have to maintain a dialogue relative to operations and patching. And
absolutely. We have larger team meetings on a weekly basis with the folks on that side of the house, as well as, you know, using tools like WebEx, where we have ongoing spaces and chats that are 24/7, 365 with respect to solving issues, working through problems, informing people what's going on, and so on.
Great. Thanks. So Ken's going to join us again at the end for our roundtable. Next, I'd like to introduce Don Goldstein. As president of 5Q, Don is responsible for the overall leadership, operations, cybersecurity strategy, and direction of 5Q's four service lines. He's an accomplished award-winning C-level technology executive as global CIO and CISO, with a distinguished 37-year career providing robust technology and cybersecurity solutions to enable business growth. And I'll say a friend. Welcome, Don. Good to have you here.
Hey, Charles. Great to be here. And thank you so much. Thanks to RealCom and the REC for hosting this second part. As Charles said, we are a full spectrum managed IT and cyber security services firm that operates in the commercial and corporate real estate industry. Cyber is an extremely important component of what we do. At the property and at the corporate level. But let me dive right into some topics. And I don't have slides because I want to talk about some things that are current and pressing. So I want to have everyone kind of focus on why this problem of OT is so important and pervasive at the property level. Last week, we talked about IT. And we talked about some of the common threats between IT and OT, and I brought a couple of examples to play there. Now we're talking about the buildings and OT, specifically IoT, IIoT, as Charles has said. So why is this a problem? And Charles did touch on this on the outset. You know, IT deals with system availability, it deals with financial impacts, it deals with confidentiality, the data itself, and any IP that companies have. OT has a different threat vector. We're talking now about the physical plant. We're talking, as Sabine mentioned, about security. There's life, health, and safety entangled in building systems. Loss of facility, a loss of certain things in the facility, can bring on all kinds of issues beyond just a financial and a reputational impact. And then you have the whole supply chain, the third parties that manage buildings, the third parties that provide services to buildings. You know, and Ken talked about government buildings. Now we're into a space where we're really talking about potentially national security if those buildings are breached. So just to put that in some context, you may have heard of Ubiquiti Networks. That breach was disclosed in January by Ubiquiti. It was about a two-month breach starting in December of last year and into January of this year before it was announced and brought under control. But just this Tuesday, you can see on Brian Krebs on Security, what he talks about here, what was first announced about that breach and what actually may have happened based on a whistleblower report are quite different things. So who is Ubiquiti? Well, they're a major vendor of cloud-enabled IoT devices. That includes routers, that includes network video recorders, security cameras. They announced there was a breach of the third-party cloud provider that exposed customer credentials, potentially. So go change your password. Well, a whistleblower was involved in the incident response, spoke up, especially to the European data protection folks, and said, because this is a global company, and said, no. Ubiquiti downplayed the catastrophic event that happened, perhaps in order to prop up the stock price. Well, it's since plunged by at least a third since that was disclosed earlier in the week. And that third party claim was a bit of a fabrication. So what does all that mean? Well, remember, we talk about a lot of information and a lot of these systems being controlled out of the cloud. Well, they happen to have had their control systems hosted at Amazon, and someone who had full elevated privileged access, their LastPass, their password manager account was compromised, and all the credentials that existed were exposed, which means basically they had full access to everything, including customer data, including all of those control systems, and including the source code to those systems. Now, just imagine the impact of something like that. Right. So as Charles said, that's kind of the tip of the iceberg. You know, we can get into some other things right now. I want to move ahead with questions and then certainly with the panel and hear your questions. But I just wanted to kind of bring to light why this is so important for us to be talking about. It goes from life safety to national security. I really do believe that why the REC exists and why other organizations are paying attention is because of this issue.
Hey, Don, thanks. So, you know, last week we talked about cyber insurance. And so I think there are some that may be listening that might feel like, well, you know, these are kind of important things, but, you know, I've got insurance, so we're covered here. How does cyber insurance now relate to the OT world? You know, can we expand on that?
Yeah, sure. That's really interesting. So I before the 20 plus years in commercial real estate, I spent a number of years in the property casualty industry with companies and large global brokers. What I can tell you is this: if people depend on their cyber insurance to cover any incidents, that may or may not be the place where they need to focus. Certainly, there's no harm in having cyber insurance, but I want to bring awareness of the greater insurance world that all of the property owners and operators have at their fingertips that already exist. And I just actually saw something this morning about this that drives this home. So there is something called boiler and machinery insurance. Well, usually you think of that in terms of industrial systems, that sort of thing. Well, actually, you can put a boiler machinery policy onto a commercial property policy and have devices covered that control systems in buildings. And so you can be covered there, maybe even more than you can on the cyber side if those systems become disabled. That's one aspect, but there's also crime insurance and there's general liability and there's other ways to look at this. So if you don't already work with, if you're on the IT side, if you're on the property side, you should be working with the risk management team. You should be talking to knowledgeable brokers about these coverages because there's a vast world out there that I think is kind of untapped. That we can be utilizing as we grow more sophisticated in this area.
You know, you mentioned that one of the concerns, though, is making sure that whoever is kind of, we'll say, working in your OT, whether it's providing cybersecurity or insurance, they've got to understand it. And so what's the gap, I guess, in the insurance industry or in just in the industry in general on the OT side of the world? I mean, the facilities guys know it because they install it and they use it, but what about the everyone else who's worried about it?
Well, I think that awareness is going to be addressed in a number of ways. First of all, and I was fortunate to be part of a program Carnegie Mellon has with the insurance industry and cybersecurity, right? So when they have kind of a certification program to bring awareness to brokers and underwriters and others in the industry about it. Well, things like that are popping up more and more. Those opportunities to learn more, expand your horizons more about that. What I haven't seen as much is that focus on the OT side as I have on the IT side, yeah. But it's the REC that can bring that, and it's other organizations, you know, that were mentioned earlier that can come into play here and really help establish the framework around this. As the REC develops white papers, best practices, that sort of thing, I think it can encompass these areas as well.
Great. Well, that's great input, Don. So Don's going to also join us at the end for our roundtable. Thanks, Don. Before our next guest joins, we're going to have a short video for you.
Ready to reconceive, reshape, renew, and rebuild? We're talking buildings of the future. It's the perfect time to renew our living ecosystems to be smarter, safer, sustainable. Retrofit with the hardware, software, and services that create real resilience. Redesign with more digital, more electric, and more efficiency. Retool so they revise, react, and respond to our needs. Life is on.
Andrew Nix is going to be joining us. He is an operational cybersecurity consultant with Schneider Electric, where he delivers cybersecurity defense solutions and insights for OT, ICS, SCADA, critical infrastructure environments. He brings over 10 years of experience in industrial process engineering with a focus in control system security across various industries. Andrew, welcome.
Thank you, Charles. Thank you, everybody, for having me. Like Charles said, I'm Andrew Nix with Schneider Electric down here in Houston, where it's a nice sunny day. I'm happy to be with y'all. So earlier, Sabine mentioned three pillars of a sustainable cyber program for building controls. Those are awareness, risk mitigation, and manageability. And I think she's spot on. And I wanted to lead in with that when we're talking about secure remote access for building systems. So I think all of that leads to the main goal of cybersecurity in the building space, which is to maintain reliability and maintain control. So attackers are looking for even the smallest oversights that they can use to disrupt in a way that they think you won't expect, right? So from a remote access standpoint, this is super important to consider, because while you may think that your OT remote access system looks like this, all, you know, battle ready and secure, if it's not implemented properly, if it's not managed properly, or if you're using a generic, you know, screen sharing type of tool that isn't built for operational systems to give vendors and folks access to your system, to an attacker, it could look more like this. And you could be opening yourself up to vulnerabilities, not only from your own network, but from your suppliers' networks as they try to, you know, do remote diagnostics and remote support that are both, you know, functions that are very critical for a modern environment. But that doesn't mean that we should unplug everything and live in fear. We just need to have an understanding of why proper remote access is important and how some of the best practices fit into that and can help you maintain reliability and maintain control of your building systems. And that's really important today, and it's continuing to grow, because as we see more and more, folks are recognizing that this is a risk factor. And we've heard that there's specific insurance for this type of event. There's all sorts of new tools and technologies built around securing the operational space for buildings and building management, because people know that there's value in those systems, and attackers know there's value in disrupting them. We know that there's likely regulatory compliance coming. All it generally takes is one big event for the government to step in and put in some controls that everyone has to follow. So we've seen that in other areas, like in the UK, where IoT devices are all mandated and regulated now. We expect that that will come eventually in our space as well. And you know, from there's also kind of a new age of threats. We're really past the days of a guy in a dark room in a hooded sweatshirt typing War and Peace into his computer trying to disrupt your mainframe, right? Attackers really just want to cause an unexpected disruption and find a way to make money off of the pain that it causes. And they're getting more creative in the ways that they do this. And to bring this a little closer to home, I bet if I were to say something like in the you know remote working days, Alexa, add cereal to my shopping list. If one of you have those devices in earshot, I've just accessed the system in your home environment through a tool in an unauthorized way and caused an unexpected disruption. Sorry about that, by the way. But it is a point to express that if that's your operational environment, you've had somebody use a tool that is positive in nature to get to a system that you didn't expect them to get to. Now you have to scramble to address it because someone's accessed your facility in a way you didn't expect. And then lastly, from you know a shortage of qualified employees, I think this is something we all feel. There's just not enough folks with the expertise in the specific operational tools that we use to be able to specifically address their concerns day to day. And so we need help in being able to address those by you know, remote access and remote problem solving functionality, which is why remote access is so important. So how do you accomplish all of those, prepare for the future, give your facility the best way to get analytical data and be secure, but not add complexity to the system, not add risk, and do it in a way that's affordable? Well, fortunately, there are some best practices that we can follow to achieve those goals. I'll just take a couple minutes to review those with you. To keep in mind, if you already have an OT access system in place, and are trying to you know solidify it, make it stronger, or if you're looking for a new one. We're kind of in a unique position at Schneider being a manufacturer of you know building management systems, and that we can see what of course we're doing in the buildings and facilities that we own, but also what our customers are doing throughout the industry as a whole. And some of the things that we see being most important these days are one, at the core, just understanding that visibility and access are different things, and you may need one or the other. Visibility being view only. How do I see what's going on from the outside? Maybe give somebody a view of a screen or a view of an operation so that they can help you over the phone to diagnose it, but not necessarily make changes themselves. So the control is still in the hands of your employees at the facility. Access, of course, being the opposite of that, where there's more availability of direct you know, contact where folks can make changes to your system as you oversee them. The second is to stay vendor agnostic, and this is really important in cybersecurity as a whole, as a concept. There are many different vendors in all of our environments, including ours. I don't think there's any facility that has a single vendor equipment throughout the whole thing. But cybersecurity has to be holistic. It has to approach everything and not be segmented to a specific area. Otherwise, you're just creating more segmentation, you're creating more risk and more complexity. So really look for tools and operational access tools that can approach all the different systems that you have in your environment, regardless of the vendor, regardless of the age. There are tools that do that. And I'll show you a screenshot of one of them. Logging is a critical function. So important to be able to go back and revisit what happens. If you don't have logs, you really don't have anything. You don't have the ability to you know, go back and analyze what might have caused an outage or something to fail. You don't have the ability to do root cause analysis. So tools that have built-in logging, whether that's text-based where you can see actions people took, who logged in, how long were they there, what were they interacting with, as well as video logging so you can follow step by step, what did they see? What were they clicking on? How was their mouse moving? Everything that they were doing so that you can take a step-by-step look back and understand what did this vendor do? What did they change? What was done in case there is an issue that needs to be resolved or just for training purposes? No direct connection. This is a very important when we were talking about VPNs and you know tools that aren't necessarily perfect for OT in operational environments. We really try to segment ourselves from the actual devices. So if you look at this diagram on the left of the slide here, when we implement remote access, we do it in a way that users are only interacting at the kind of the higher level in their environment, the administrative level, the enterprise level. They're talking to a server there that's managing the connection to the end devices. So no one actually has the end credentials of those devices that they're talking to. So someone can't walk up to a device and make changes to it directly outside of the remote access tool. They have to use the approved channels to do that. And that is very, very powerful in making sure that one, nobody transfers issues from their own device to into your network or into your devices. And two, to make sure that you're in control, again, that word control, of how folks are accessing things. And then the last two quickly, utilizing your standards. ISA 62443 is great here. There's other standards in the industry that kind of give you a high level overview of what you should be doing, best practices, other best practices you can expand into, network architectures that make sense for you, that you can use as a baseline to set up your environment and make it secure with remote systems. And then lastly, minimizing exceptions. This is very important because we see a lot of folks that try to put something in place and then immediately start identifying other ways to do things around it, which can be trouble. So really try to implement the tool, use it the way you intended to, put the standards in place and follow those.
Thanks, Andrew. That was great. So, you know, I'll share a story I had heard, but I mean, one time I think somebody going in to do a property audit, the facilities manager said to them, you're not here to shut off my streaming music service, are you? And so, you know, if that's the mentality, how do you address that same question that says, why can't I just have remote access? Why do I need all this? Why is it important?
Sure. No, it's a great question. And we see this a lot because, you know, VPNs are very cheap. That type of connection can be very inexpensive. And so folks say, oh, hey, I can save some money here and just use this standard IT software. But it comes back to the core goal of cybersecurity, which is maintaining control, right? So if you have folks that are trying to stream Netflix on a workstation, you know, building management workstation, that could be a problem. And so going back to our best practices, if we just use, you know, give VPN logins to vendors so that they could, you know, can come in and do as they please, you're likely losing a lot of that control. So it could be much more difficult to, you know, see when folks are accessing the system. What are they accessing? What are they doing? And what changes have they made? There might be a logging function there. So you're allowing a direct connection between their computer and yours and your network. They're more open to what they can do, and it can be harder to control that. So we generally say, you know, you've invested a lot into your facilities to make them the best in class, to make them comfortable for your tenants. And for tenants that may not totally understand cybersecurity, an access breach can severely damage trust. So this is a space where the right tools make all the difference.
Great. Thank you. Well, we've got more questions for you, but we're going to run those in the roundtable at the end. Sure. So thank you, Andrew. Before our next guest joins, we have another video for you.
Intelligent Buildings is the only company focused solely on smart building advisory and managed services at scale for both new projects and existing portfolios. We can guide your smart building planning and execution for new construction, as well as assess your buildings globally for vulnerabilities and opportunities. We can then continuously monitor, manage, and remediate the inherent risks from contractors and control systems. Since 2004, we are the most trusted and experienced name in smart building services.
Andy Schonberger is the Vice President of Client Services at Intelligent Buildings, helping clients with advisory, site assessments, and managed services. He has 15 years experience in facilities management and technology, ranging from industrial, large industrial to commercial office, where he's held engineering, project management, advisory, and hands-on implementation roles for organizations. Andy, welcome.
Thanks, Charles. The intro is a great way of saying I've got my fingernails dirty in the building systems. And I say the same goes with the IB team here. And from our perspective, we see a lot of misunderstanding in the market about the topic of cybersecurity. And from our perspective, you know, cyber and how it's perceived and the VPNs and firewalls and how a lot of folks think of it from the IT perspective is just an element of an overall program. And it really needs to be about, you know, entirely about risk management. We really need to be thinking about business continuity of these services so that we're not impacting the building systems. And we really are seeing these risks and costs happening out in industry. And these are on the building system side of things, on the HVAC and the lighting and the metering and elevators and some other scary things that have material impacts on life safety and obviously brand damage and possible equipment damage. And, you know, what you heard Don talk about and Ken talk about needing to prevent and Sabine addressing, you know, the change management aspects of this. We've got some actually case studies here. I won't go into the details here, but they are available as educational content on our site with that link there. But the real key here is there are just so many gaps still in industry. Even, you know, building on what Don said on the liability side, we've seen many of our clients actually talk to their insurance companies and say, I'm not really sure how we'll address that. We'll have to figure that out if we get to a litigation point. And that's not something you want to hear, or a landlord or a property manager or owner really wants to hear when it comes to avoiding risk. But one thing I will say from the incidents that we're seeing is not a lot of them are what you'd consider hacking. They're actually, you know, things that have happened from the inside out that are more people related, that are more process related. So, you know, what's causing this? I mean, we've kind of talked about the fragmentation of our industry, right? And take, these are some examples here, and you can quibble with me on the numbers if you'd like, but let's say you got a 100 building portfolio. You may have, you know, three per building and companies, you know, managing systems on your behalf. And you may have six, you know, systems per building with separate networks that are unmanaged or lightly managed, let's say. And then an order of magnitude higher of actual folks logging into things or connecting to or servicing or on a day-to-day basis managing. So this fragmentation is half the challenge. We just don't have the centralization of systems and vendors and servers that, you know, you would on the OT side of things. So we this is really what makes this challenge so much different, to say nothing of, you know, legacy systems and that 20-year-old, you know, BMS system that's got some, you know, IP enablement, but not necessarily the ability to control anything. And these are well-known risks, I'd say, on the OT side of things. And, you know, you can pull quotes from Gartner or NIST that basically says if you just blanket apply IT best practices and services to OT, you can actually make things worse. You can knock some of those systems off in trying to do your due diligence. So this is not just a technology answer to a lot of this. And really the quote I heard recently was that culture eats technology for breakfast. You can do your best on putting in those systems and services, but if you don't have the right culture or awareness or usage, then it's all for naught. So three pillars here that, you know, we recommend you look at and build on. And I think from the conversation you've heard so far, I think the obvious part of things is the IT networks. You know, we want to make sure that we've got known one-to-one connections with, you know, a zero trust model. You're going to hear more from Gary at Tempered about a way to do this, but not have, you know, default allow connectivity, but go more to default deny in terms of how things are accessed in a building. We need to be able to have systems that are plug and play for these, you know, facility folks that are great at managing buildings and understand mechanical equipment, but just don't have the IT expertise. So we need to make sure that we're working within their skills and providing them support, and particularly at a cost-effective price point, you know, whether it's per square foot or per building. We can't just blanket apply enterprise-grade solutions in the real estate and corporate or commercial real estate world because of budgets, because of net operating income goals, because of the business realities. So we need to make sure we structure, you know, our mitigation plans and programs in a way that makes sense given those constraints. Now, clearly, it's not just about the IT networks. We've spent a lot of time talking about the pick your buzzword on the building systems. Ken, you know, gave you a pretty good overview of the systems we're talking about in scope here. But, you know, we do need to make sure that in terms of the continuity, that we've got backups of these systems on a fairly regular basis that are controlled by the owner and not just into those fragmented vendor ecosystems and have, you know, vendors say, yes, we've got a backup. Meanwhile, what they have is the original configuration file from when they built the system, to say nothing of a virtual as-built. We need to make sure that, you know, back to the typical IT side of things, the passwords are managed, that, you know, they're not defaults, that systems lock out when not touched for a while, that there is a proper way to manage software updates, Least privileges enabled on credentials. And all those things are knowable and doable when you build out the policies and require your vendors to do them and have some enforcement mechanisms and tracking, if you will. The last side of things, which I think we're beating on pretty hard here, is the people side of this. That all, you know, if you don't tackle awareness and use and policy and have enforcement mechanisms on how remote access is being used and how credentials are used and how all of these things are configured and used, you can really undo all the good work you've done on items one and two here. And so we need to make sure that's consumable by this fragmented ecosystem. So we need to make it relatively easy. We have to train them and make them aware and give them bite-sized bits of training that allow them to still do their jobs and do what they're really good at, but not create any additional risks that, you know, may impact the users of a building. So whether that's, you know, tailored phishing activities or penetration testing, you know, hunting for building systems and that new rogue device, if you will, or whether it's formal training or online, security event training, those sorts of things, there's known ways to tackle it. But if you leave out kind of anything in this holistic program, you can certainly be in for a rude awakening and some challenges here. So we really want to make sure that we're getting to that, you know, NIST checkbox or even Gartner's checkbox, that we're approaching OT the right way for that continuity in how the business runs, but still taking advantage of all the lessons learned from IT over the last couple of decades, while acknowledging the realities of resources and skill sets that we're dealing with at a property level when we're, you know, connecting a new meter or a new lighting system or upgrading something or managing how remote access is built into a service contract. We really want to make sure we're tackling everything here and not just be thinking about, you know, set and forget, you know, a new firewall and some port settings or a VPN because of, you know, the risks you've heard here. So our perspective, we've got some content on our website that's educational in nature that feel free to have a look at to continue to build the case to roll this out in your projects, in your portfolios. So I think that's the content I had to cover there.
Great. Thanks, Andy. So, you know, you mentioned zero trust networks and, I think Gary's going to go into that a little bit more, but I think this blends into culture from the standpoint of training. I mean, some of these concepts are new, not just for the IT side, but obviously for the OT side and the facilities teams. How important is training and how do you get your contractors and staff, you know, to sit still long enough to learn about something new like zero trust?
Yeah, it's really about giving to them in bite-sized pieces and establishing requirements. That can be fairly simple, a policy guidance given to them and build a plan to check in on them, to help them centralize some services and say, don't worry, we'll handle that remote access for you and you guys just use this pathway we're providing. That can be quarterly check-ins on those compliance checks for how they're using systems. Again, we don't want to make this some huge lift for them, otherwise it's just, you're just going to get pushback like crazy. Now, in this ecosystem, you can still get pushback even if it's very easy. But the idea here is to make it consumable and over time put those enforcement mechanisms in. So write it into the contract. Don't have, you know, these vendors build in, you know, some solution that's not, you know, high enough quality or unmanaged like those the unmanaged VPN we talked about earlier. But really make this fairly easy, simple steps for them and provide them with, you know, some low cost ways to bump up their score and get better visibility and turn that into business opportunity for them rather than just a big stick over their head.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, touching on the supply chain aspects, I mean, your contracts are really your hammer. And so to your point, I mean, those contracts need to, identify and really detail these things to ensure and protect you. So thanks, Andy. Andy's going to join again at our roundtable at the end here. But before our next guest joins, we have another video for you. Thanks.
Today, as the internet has grown to become a fundamental part of the world's economy, the question is, do we really trust its primary protocol, TCP/IP? Just think about it. Every connected device uses an IP address for identity and location, including endpoints that cannot protect themselves. However, the problem with this is that TCP/IP is inherently insecure, which leads to the majority of networking and security challenges today. To address this problem, Tempered Networks takes a different approach than traditional security solutions leveraging standards-based technology used by U.S. aerospace and defense departments, and recognized by the IETF community as the next big change in IP infrastructure, Tempered Networks changes the network model from IP address routing to cryptographic identities. This new architecture starts with zero trust, then establishes secure encrypted communications to create a trusted private network, only allowing whitelisted devices to the trusted layer. Devices in the trusted layer are cloaked, undetectable from the underlying network. The result? Hackers can't attack what they can't see. With this new cloaking technology, security is baked in, not bolted on, significantly reducing your attack surface and making your network secure by default. You can focus on generating revenue, not the complexity that adds risk to your business. Sound too good to be true? Well, it is that good. Learn how Tempered Networks can help you secure your network today. Book an online demo.
Gary, welcome back. Gary Kinghorn is the Director of Marketing at Tempered Networks. He has over 20 years experience in the networking and security industries, including various product marketing and business development roles at Cisco, Nokia, HP, 3Com, and Startup Forward Networks. Gary, take it away.
Yeah, thanks, Charles. Great to be here again this week. For those of you that haven't heard about Tempered Networks, we're a very general purpose network security technology vendor, focusing on the zero trust space and moving organizations into this the security model. But we have a particular advantage, or you know, unique value proposition for OT networks. And the way that we designed our zero trust infrastructure. And part of that was because the technology was originally developed for industrial control systems and manufacturing operations, as it was developed commercially and then brought to market by Tempered when we formed the company. So that's kind of what we're all about. We don't have, I would say, particular expertise in the commercial real estate markets, but we recognize the opportunity. We tend to go after these kinds of verticals with partners and that have the relationships and the market knowledge and the understanding and the value-added services. So we have a number of partners in this commercial real estate space, particularly for their OT kinds of networks and use cases. And to that end, we actually just announced yesterday a new partnership with Intelligent Buildings, who's on the panel today as well, where they're using the Tempered infrastructure as part of a managed security service for their clients built around our system, which I think shows the viability of the system for these kinds of applications, as well as how cost effective they are in this market, because we think the commercial real estate market is fairly cost conscious compared to some of the other verticals we work in. And in fact, we just had another meeting with a customer that is very large and has a lot of kiosks and point of sale terminals, and they said basically we have a blank check to solve this problem. So, but it's not always that case. Trust me. So moving on to the next slide, you know, a lot of our customers are certainly driven to solve some of these security issues that are caused by digital transformation, or maybe in the OT space, they call it Industry 4.0, where they're leveraging more data, they're putting more and more endpoint systems, operational systems online, having to share that with the IT side of the house, having to open that up to remote access, sharing it with cloud applications, allowing remote vendors in. So a lot of times we talk about not only the IT-OT convergence as being a particular security challenge, but also the dissolving network perimeter, where you know, you need to give remote access to a number of, you know, different classes of users. And how do you secure, you know, as Don was saying, these OT systems, which are, you know, very physical in nature, can have real world impact. They have unique vulnerabilities. You know, Andrew was talking about, if you apply a lot of OT security principles and techniques to it, you can actually make things worse. So the challenge is very real. You know, Sabine talked about how there's an explosion of these kinds of devices coming onto the network, exposing new risks and vulnerabilities. And as our video showed, you know, it's really, you know, it's really not just, you know, your business or the way your network is designed. It's really, there are fundamental flaws in IP networking. When this, you know, those protocols were designed 50 years ago to handle a load and problems and use cases and access that just were not thought of at the time. So, you know, we're spending more money. We're spending, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars a year as an industry on security solutions, and things are just getting worse. You know, cyber incidents are getting worse. People feel that their systems are more at risk. This is certainly exacerbated in the OT space. And, you know, we are seeing, you know, proliferation of devices, you know, billions and billions of more devices. In fact, OT is going to lead a lot of the security requirements for everybody going forward as their unique security problems have to be addressed more so than the traditional IT market for some of the security vendors. So what does that mean? So zero trust is really, you know, getting to be the answer. Organizations have to consider it. I would say that the real takeaway here that you can benefit from a zero trust approach is getting to micro segmentation, where your policies are really granular. They're very specific about who can access what, and that reduces the attack surface by 95% or more in a lot of cases. So rather than hackers being able to probe vulnerabilities, as our video showed, those systems to hackers, to unauthorized users without the right cryptographic identity, those systems just become invisible to them. They're not even available to be probed for vulnerabilities. So you're greatly reducing your risk. You're reducing these attack surfaces and improving things. And that can have impact on benefits for, you know, your cyber insurance premiums, potentially, certainly your simplification of operations. As Charles mentioned right at the opening of this webinar, you begin to align your security policies, your remote access policies and everything around identity of users, identity of systems, rather than these arcane VLANs or network segments or IP addresses. So what you can do, how you can secure it and simplify your operations is very, very tangible. So certainly in the commercial building, OT space, micro segmentation and secure remote access are two primary drivers that we can solve. And again, secure remote access, I think, is very easy and where most of our customers end up starting, because there are things like, you know, warranty access services and, you know, that vendor access that just has to be permitted in these kinds of environments to very sensitive equipment. And, you know, we can uniquely attach that access to these cryptographic identities and make it very viable to do safely. So with that, I will turn it back over to you, Charles, for any Q&A and or the panel.
Well, first of all, congratulations, Gary, on that announcement with you and Tempered and Intelligent Buildings. That sounds like it's going to be a great opportunity for both organizations. I want to make a quick plug out to everyone who's listening right now for Q&A. We're going to, right after Gary, go to a roundtable group. And so get your questions in now so we can ask them then at that time. So, Gary, coming back to Tempered, you know, there's a lot of zero trust vendors out there. What really differentiates Airwall in the OT space?
Yeah, so Airwall being our product name, that comes from, we're reintroducing the traditional air gap that OT systems typically had away from, you know, the IT network or external access. So that air gap has been traditionally very important. So reintroducing that, we can do that with a combination of a couple things. We don't have to put agents or anything on the devices. So it's very good for unmanaged, unpatchable devices that don't even have an operating system to be modified. So we can move the endpoint security out to a hardware device outside of the OT devices and essentially secure them individually still. So it's a combination of hardware, inline devices, agents, as well as the controller that can either reside on premises or in our cloud environment to do orchestration for all of these endpoints to simplify the management. And somebody else on the panel was talking about, or I guess Ubiquiti, as a cloud security vendor, they were breached. So if you move your security policies and your security controls up to the cloud, you get breached, then you're still hosed. So we're not doing that. We're not advocating migrating security to the cloud like a lot of vendors are. We are able to keep it on premises. You can control it. You can simply manage policies, who gets remote access, maintain this air gap with our hardware-based devices and encrypting all the traffic end-to-end across any network around the world. So your remote vendor can access from a different country, a different WAN, a different cellular provider, get access through one encrypted tunnel all the way to your endpoint and ensure that it's done securely and it's invisible to everybody else. So long-winded answer.
Great. No, that was good, Gary. Thank you. So let's bring everyone back now. And we've got about 15 minutes left. We'll see if we can kind of squeeze a few questions in here. Everyone make room a little bit for each other. Okay. So in terms of securing, this question came from last week, and I'd like to repeat it because it's really specific to the OT side. So in terms of securing your OT networks, can you speak to the challenges and solutions related to third-party equipment, and third-party access to your networks? Sabine, let's start with you. How does Google handle your third parties?
It would be great if our portfolio was fully standardized and we could qualify one third-party equipment and make it work and fully secure. The reality is not the case. So there are some level of assessment of the solution. There are some potential for replacement if we really don't trust the solution. Everything has been talked about during this seminar are options of, can we move that system, a third-party system, on a managed solution or not? If not, what are the exceptions and how do we track it? How do we make sure we still have some level of visibility? I think it's really moving from this unknown black whole world to a little more visibility and evolve with more and more trackability of all those systems. So it's not a simple answer, right? Otherwise it would be done.
Right.
Some of them are really old and it's some level of upgrade. Some of them are just out of life and should be replaced. Some of them is just there's everything out there. And I think for every single building we look at a different solution, which is it makes it even more complex.
Ken, what about COPT? How are you handling your third-party challenges?
Yeah, so after we really pulled our buildings off the internet and got them into a more private and protected environment with secure remote access, we tackled that problem. And what we did was we pushed everything back into the HR system to where if somebody at COP needs to give third-party access to the building systems or anything else, they have to request it through HR. So we built this process where the source of truth for account management actually resides outside of IT for all employees and third parties. And so, within that is it has to be renewed every 90 days. If the account is not accessed within 30 days, it's suspended. And we built a lot of automated processes around Active Directory, and we primarily use Okta for a lot of identity management capabilities. And we're working our way down towards the building, right? So where we can do things, like Sabine was saying, where we have some more modern solutions that may have LDAP or AD integrations and so on, we're tying that thread together as much as we possibly can, because as those third parties come and go or don't access those accounts, we're sort of automatically terminating access along the way. If we can't do that, then they actually have to physically go to the building with one of our technicians and, get to the systems that way. So we did a lot of work early on, not just from a technology perspective, but around that account management process and working within the company and doing some real heavy identity management work.
Great. Thank you. Anybody else like to touch on that relative to third parties? those that are third parties?
I saw a question, Charles, on the coming in talking about remote access from things like cell phones and other, you know, devices that are not certainly, you know, how do you secure those things? Or if you go into a Starbucks and you want to remote access these kinds of equipment. This is definitely achievable, but, you know, and that's one of the advantages that we have at Tempered with our Zero Trust remote access solution, where you can put these cryptographic identities and secure any endpoint. So you can really standardize around this kind of model on any endpoint to get at that's remote, whether it's a cell phone or anything like that, to any device and from any vendor. So you can actually standardize around it. You don't have different solutions for different buildings, different types of equipment, different use cases.
So, you know, complimentary to that, Andrew Nix, we had a question for you that came in that was similar, that, you know, how do you limit the direct access to devices? I think, you know, Gary has a solution. What is the Schneider solution in that respect?
So it's hard to answer that question without sort of plugging our own tool that we use for that and that we provide to our customers for that. So apologies for that, but we typically, when we implement a tool, when we developed our tool, the purpose was creating, you know, we've always talked about defense in depth in cybersecurity, right? And so we were trying to create and identify a tool that allowed for that layer of protection between outsiders trying to connect and the end devices that we're trying to protect. So I think there's multiple answers to this question. The first part of it is, one, cybersecurity as a whole, trying to make sure that you have appropriate controls in your cybersecurity platform to create segmented zones and where of operations, so that you're limiting where folks can reach and what they can get to. And then utilizing, you know, taking the time to identify a tool or having a vendor help you identify the right tool that you, you know, mandate for remote access to your system, so you stay in control, that has that that separation built in. In our case, it was setting it up such that there's two servers, right? A higher level access server that folks are logging into at their enterprise level or their administrative level, higher up in the operational architecture and the administrative architecture. That's what they're interacting with. And then the tool itself manages the connection down into the device level and the credentials to do so that you have more control over, you know, what kind of access they have, what software they can use, et cetera, et cetera. So I think it's a functionality you can find in a tool, as well as having the types, the security practices in place to further enforce where folks can get and can't get inside your network.
Great, thank you. So Andy, I've got to ask you the question. This is big news for you guys with this announcement. So, yeah, how does this? What's your perspective on what this means to intelligent buildings? How are you guys looking at Tempered, and what are you going to be doing?
Yeah, we looked at it as a way to deploy these policies for our clients. We identified, you know, that deploying, enforcing, managing remote access policies, the sensitivity of our clients to any re-architecting of any networks in existing buildings was a major concern, and not everybody could afford to put in a fiber optic, you know, based building network in every building, but still wanted to manage these risks. For us, we were looking for a tool that would help us with our services. And our services, the idea was, we identify some risks for our clients and they say, great, help us mitigate them. How do we do this? And so that's where we wanted to continue to provide our services in management of those third-party vendors. I mean, part of our expertise is understanding how fragmented this ecosystem is and then helping our clients manage it. So in this case, what that means is working through with our clients on the policy, who approves, who's going to be able to access a building. How, you know, what policies are we going to enforce with those third-party vendors? And Tempered is a tool that really enables those services for us. So we're like a carpenter and we've picked a hammer here. Not to oversimplify, but, you know, our clients are really interested in what's the building, to use the carpenter analogy, right? And so we've looked at Tempered as really enabling those services and being and the easy button, if you will, for our clients to deploy with those challenges I talked about earlier. And really it is about, you know, who's going to access, how, who's allowing it, when, great, what did they do, what could they see, What if something went wrong? Revoke their privileges. All those things our clients are asking us to take care of. And so this, we're excited about the partnership here because it fits all those challenges we're very well aware of in real estate.
Well, we look forward to hearing some case studies about that going forward. So Don, I'm going to bring it back to you here. We've got the $64,000 question that came in from Dave Gallagher at Oxford. This is what everyone wants to know, and I'll start with you. But what are the core cyber things that should be addressed, and what's the typical cost to get up to spec?
Yeah, that is the big question, right? Because there's no one answer to that question. I think you have to look at your portfolio differently in terms of what those assets are and what you have in those buildings. I mean, a Class B suburban office building is not going to be treated necessarily the same way as a downtown Class A building, which isn't going to be handled the same way as a multifamily campus. So we try to boil it down to, well, how much is it going to cost us to do that? And before you spend a penny, just think about the things that have been discussed here in terms of the policies. Just get basic things in place. If you don't secure properly the devices you already have, by getting rid of default passwords and credentials, the things that don't cost you anything, right? Then you can get to the point where we can do other things that we've been talking about in terms of going to more layered security and that defense in depth. But if you start it on the front end, and I think this has been drilled home, and certainly Sabine talks about it a lot in terms of new buildings, think about it on the front end. Do it security by design, not by after the fact, right? When it will cost you more and be more difficult. So the more you put in front, the better off you'll be on the back end of those projects. And then on same thing on acquisitions and dispositions, right? Do it there too when you're doing diligence, right? Make it part Absolutely. Of that acquisition piece.
So this plays right also into ROI. We talked about that a little bit last week as well. So Sabine, I'd like to kind of go back to you. I mean, when we talk about ROI for intelligent buildings, I mean, there's had to be a justification for why we were trying to do this. But now cybersecurity comes into play. Is there an ROI for cybersecurity? Is it all about reputation or risk and whatever it takes?
Well, and so I actually wanted to add on to Don, right, the concept of what type of buildings we have and whether it's strategic building or non-strategic building. On the Google side, we have that concept of every Googler is the same. We can't prioritize one building over another. Like, everybody has to be secure, but there is definitely that concept of, you know, where do you want to invest more than others? And as far as ROI goes, I'm representing the real estate and workplace team. And so I come in with, it's not only an ROI on securing the building, there's opportunity, right? And there's opportunity with cyber secure remote access. And so it's first of all, making sure that we don't transfer the IT risk into an OT risk, right? So, you know, it's great to block, to cage my building, but if I can't operate it, it's a huge impact. And also, while I'm in my building, what is the opportunity to make it better? The way I want to present the ROI is not only saying, you know, those are the risks, and it's impossible to quantify reputational risk. What is it? Your stock is going to go down. The safety risk is one that's even not quantifiable, but it's certainly unacceptable. Everything else is just like, it's, I don't know, up there, 330, 300. 3 million, 3 billion, who knows? You know, it's up there somewhere. And so quantifying that is hard. But what I am pushing for on the Google side is quantifying the business opportunity for the operation team, and giving everybody remote access, because those are the things you can do. And so kind of bringing that aspect to the conversation and really refusing that we're only look at the IT concept. And it's really growth on both sides, growth from the IT team to understand what we're trying to accomplish. And I have to say, when they see our building, it's mind boggling, right? This, the number of end of life systems that exists and that we don't touch. But if we're gonna go and make it secure, then let's replace those end of life systems. So it's not only security, it's like, while we're at it, how will we make it even better? you know, and this upgrade towards a better solution? And how about we make sure that now the data goes to cloud? And so I'm using this opportunity of this IT discussion and security discussion to then add opportunity for the operational team. So that's my approach. And the ROI is easier to quantify, I think, when it's the opportunity on the operation side. Like I say, I don't know how to quantify reputational risk, and it's really a personal opinion or how people feel it. Like IT and security, they're really scared by it. I would say on the real estate side, they're like, what? The stock will go down for 2 days and then what? It'll go back up. So it really, it's just more of an opinion than something I can quantify.
Well, thank you. Sabine's going to have our last word here. So thank you on that. I mean, I think that was a great point. Nancy, I'm going to turn it back to you. We probably have enough questions. We could go on another half hour. So thank you all for participating today. Great.
Yeah, we'll try and make sure we get the audience responses to those questions we didn't have time for. And thank you. That was a great session. Thank you, Charles. And thanks to all our panelists for their valuable insight and our contributions today. Before we sign off, I'd like to just take a minute to talk about a few events we have coming up next week, or tomorrow, actually. Tune in tomorrow for our weekly news show, RealCom Live. This week, our guests, Thano Lombrinos with QuadReal and Joe Amador of Amador Consulting, will explore the evolution of the smart buildings journey, where North America stands in the global smart building race, and how to accelerate both investment in and adoption of smart building strategies. And then next week, we'll begin our new series on next-gen in-building wireless with part one, developing a comprehensive wireless strategy. You can sign up on our website or use the link I've just posted in the chat window on the right. That's it for today. Thanks again for joining us, and thank you, panel. Great job.
Thank you. Bye.